And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson.
For the first time, Lakeshore Public Media is getting an intimate, up-close and personal look at municipal government leaders across the region with our new series, Meet the Mayor. Today, we're in LaPorte to speak to Mayor Tom Dermody. Mayor Dermody grew up in LaPorte and knew firsthand the potential of the city and its residents. Since taking office, Dermody has advocated for enhancing the city's infrastructure, housing, public services, economic development, transportation, as well as quality of life. Mayor Dermody is here to share how his leadership is putting a spotlight on the community about the new $1 billion Microsoft Data Hub investment. Today, Mayor Tom Dermody on the City of LaPorte in his own words.
As we sit here in City Hall, you're in your second term as mayor. Prior to that, you were a member of the Indiana House of Representatives representing the 20th District.
Yes.
You were a small business owner and you worked in sales. So I want to ask you, you have a wealth of experience from both the business sector as well as the public servant sector. And I've given the cliff notes of your resume, but spend some time and tell us more about you, the person.
Absolutely. I think, you know, most importantly, whether you look at my business background, mm-hmm. you look at the political experience I've had, I think it's more bringing people together mm-hmm. because the culture you set, working with others, that's the only way you're going to make change or make improvements. From a political perspective, mm-hmm. it's never been about the R versus the D, because once you take office, you throw those out the door and you have everybody working together. And, you know, we did that on day one as mayor when we had some issues that I think have been ignored for many years with slumlords mm-hmm. and taking advantage of individuals in our community, putting our community at risk. And on day one, we let them know that this no longer was going to be the way. We shut down an apartment complex right across the street wow. that had been an issue for 26 years. So we get after it. I think relentless, that when you ask the question about what would a friend say, I am going to be relentless if I believe it's the right thing, mm-hmm. But it can't just be my focus. It has to be the team's focus. And the one thing I appreciate about our leadership team and the community is, be honest with me. Mm. Don't tell me how great we're doing and then say, but, you know, let's get to it. If you don't like something, let's talk about why.
Right.
But have good reasons. Don't just make it personal.
So let me ask you, so what motivated you to pivot from being a small business owner, working in the business world, being a business leader, to get involved in public service, obviously beginning with serving on the school board?
You know, I think it was my father, and just he was always involved with the Chamber of Commerce. You know, I think there just was something that was given to my brother and I that, hey, give back. And how we looked is, LaPorte is a fantastic, unbelievable community that I had the opportunity to grow up in. Mm-hmm. And how do you give back? Too many people sit on the sidelines and just complain. And at one point, we didn't like how the school system was going and said, hey, if you want to change it, get involved. And that's what started. I never had a political background before then.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, not only did I serve, but I also was that business owner. I was that manufacturer. Right. So it's a combination. And I think that's what you see a lot of people, the true leaders, are not just trying to be a politician, but trying to give back to the community while they do their job. And that's what we have to find in the future for young people, because right now they don't want to run. And why would they?
Right.
With all the personal attacks, nobody's perfect, mm-hmm. but we need young minds, new ideas from people on both sides of the aisle to say, hey, there's got to be a better way to do things and I want to give back.
Let me ask you, so what have you brought from your experience from the business world and even from the State House to City Hall, to the City of LaPorte?
From a fiscal perspective, live within your means. These are taxpayer dollars. Mm. We passed, in my first administration, we passed the first structurally balanced budget, meaning we're not going to spend more than we have coming in the history of LaPorte. Mm. We're not going to borrow. I want to leave financially the City of LaPorte's budget in a good position for those future leaders that will come after me. Mm. Also, teamwork. You know, how do you make sure everybody knows your goals mm-hmm. and you work together? And that's whether it's my own personal money in a business or taxpayer money here with the City of LaPorte.
That is awesome. So obviously I had to do a lot of research, a lot of digging, to prepare for this interview. And one thing that I noted is that you are quite active on social media, particularly Facebook. And I found it interesting that no matter what it is, if you are highlighting a lemonade stand and encouraging people to support kids there, or if you are just out in the community highlighting, leaving City Hall, going to a business, highlighting a small business. And even when Governor Holcomb made the trek up to Northwest Indiana for the 4th of July, congratulations, by the way,
yes,
for being capital for the day, you were quite active on social media. And I sort of see this trend to that. So help me to understand, what made you adopt this strategy? And is it well received with the community?
Well, the other part is communication. And I think when you can communicate with the community, you keep them abreast of what's happening. You can't hide. And we put out there, and Jess Bruder, our communications director, has been wonderful because I'm not as tech savvy as I probably should
be. She really is wonderful.
Oh my gosh.
She's awesome.
You know, she is a godsend, and we are so glad to pull her from the State House and bring her what I consider is her home now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, without her, a lot of this doesn't get done. Yeah. But I tell you what, I think it's important that people know, number one, this is what's happening, even if it's something that we're not proud of, that needs to be improved. And then number two, I'm going to put my cell phone out there 24/7 if you have an issue or if you want to talk about it, because anybody can talk about it on social media, take shots, do whatever.
Right.
But call me directly and say, hey, be a part of the solution, not just the problem.
And I should also note for our listening and viewing audience, not only are you live on social media quite often, highlighting events, speaking about things that are happening, very much like the power outage a few days ago, but I note that you also respond in real time to comments, good or bad, as you just said. And that's quite refreshing and quite remarkable when you think about that word transparency. And as you just shared, communication is the key. So I just found it quite refreshing that you're just out there.
Well, and I appreciate that. Sometimes people want you to respond until you do, because we're not going to give you the political spin. We're going to be direct.
Right.
And whether it's our water and sewer, when we have backups, you know, we mentioned day one also, we have a $100 million problem of infrastructure because our infrastructure is 100 years old. And sometimes that means we're going to have to raise water and sewer rates, even though that most every dollar goes right back into our infrastructure. Our residents deserve the best, but we can either have low rates and do nothing or increase to competitive rates and get the work done that our residents deserve. And sometimes you have to have the direct conversation that you don't want these backups. You don't want kids playing in the streets where waste has been backed up because our infrastructure is so old. So you can't have it both ways. And I love having that direct conversation. And another one is with housing. You know, people talk every day that they want to help those low-income people, those that need help. Yet when we put a facility or in the process at our old Coke manufacturing building, that we're going to help those individuals that were homeless at one point and have either maybe a physical or mental disability, we had a pack full of people here that didn't want it in their backyard.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, where is that conversation go? It's not going to be fun. It's not going to be friendly, but we're going to stick to the facts and say this is a reason why it needs to happen.
That's quite interesting. So, Mayor Tom, I want to put a pin in something you just brought up. You were speaking about infrastructure, and I want to talk about what I consider two key strategic priorities for LaPorte: infrastructure, obviously, and economic development. And I should note for our audience that the city of LaPorte was recently awarded $1 million in federal dollars for a major infrastructure improvement to replace old sewers, which you were speaking about, to new separate sewers for sanitation and stormwater. Take a moment to tell us more about this project along Indiana Avenue that will be completed in tandem with NDOT's reconstruction of Indiana Avenue, U.S. Highway 35, I believe it is, correct?
Well, and yeah, in Indiana Avenue, it's important to get that road done, but it would be a shame not to improve the infrastructure, both water and sewer. while they're doing that work. And that's what we're trying to combine efforts with everyone that'll work with us. And that's where we said, you know, we throw the R and the D away and said, hey, Congressman Frank Mervan covers this district, and how can his office help? And boy, did they help.
Yes.
And $1 million. And we had a press conference to recognize the congressman for his effort and his office. Mm-hmm. And again, we don't care. That money is green. We don't care that it's RD
money,
and
right?
Our residents mm-hmm. don't care. They just want to improve
right.
infrastructure, and that's everybody working together. And then you talk about Microsoft. You know,
yes.
Microsoft is a big yeah. thing. Microsoft could have come to, 50,000 communities across this nation.
Right.
They chose the city of LaPorte. Yep. And, you know, we talk about competing with the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure everybody believed on day one when we said, mm-hmm. we're going to compete for those good companies
yes.
and those brand name companies. And yet here we are 5 years later, thanks to the great work of Bert Cook, our economic development team, and really our entire leadership team. Microsoft now will have a LaPorte, Indiana address.
Absolutely. So this is a great segue, because I was going to ask you about this $1 billion investment. Major from Microsoft for LaPorte to be Indiana's first data center. How exciting. You know, you don't think about, so we're from Lake County, and people in Lake County don't necessarily think that Microsoft would make the trek to LaPorte County, to LaPorte, for such a major investment. So I want to talk about that, and I want to talk more about what this will mean for LaPorte's economy, including jobs, as well as housing, and not just jobs and housing for those that will come to work specifically for Microsoft, but we know that that will create more jobs, more job opportunities, and the need for more housing in LaPorte. So talk more about that.
Absolutely. The quality of life in LaPorte was something mm-hmm. we heard, again, early on in our administration, that kids want to have more to come back to LaPorte. And they were
yes.
leaving, those that we educated, mm-hmm. smart kids.
Yep.
Now we're giving them a reason to come back home with the quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And now, hey, you can make a great living, raise a family, mm-hmm. be close to your parents, your grandparents, and make a good wage, and Microsoft will continue that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, it's going to put us on the map. And we think LaPorte, again, on day one, we expected Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the mentality,
wow.
you know, we have to have companies like that
wow.
to say, hey, we think LaPorte is a perfect place for you.
Yes.
And there's not a company out there large enough or too big that we're not going to target, we're not going to work for, because our residents deserve it.
That's a bold statement to say, for one, to say, oh, we want Microsoft, we hope that we get Microsoft. But that's a pretty bold statement, and it speaks to your leadership to say we expect Microsoft. And so I think that is so powerful. I want to talk a minute about something you just alluded to a moment ago when you spoke about our talented youth. So I want to speak about brain drain, right?
Yes.
We are losing so many talented, highly educated young people who are leaving our state, unfortunately, fleeing our state, going to where the tech jobs are. Obviously, this new Microsoft Data Hub will attract those to come back here, right? Which is so exciting. So I want to ask you, and I think you've already answered this already, do you believe that this will play a part in retaining those that are here, that are maybe in college, that are planning for those tech jobs? And do you really and truly believe that this Microsoft Hub will bring those talented young people back to the region?
100%.
Okay.
You know, we have different companies already that are recruiting engineers every day, and we need to make sure we're doing our part as the city, recruiting those high-end individuals that we've already educated here,
right.
keep tabs on them, keep involved with them, make sure that they know during the summer we're finding work for them with private companies,
wow.
and just make sure that they know, hey, when you graduate, LaPorte's a great place to live. And that's why the bank's apartments were so important, so we can have some higher-end living,
mm.
but also address, again, the slumlords that have been in LaPorte for 20 years or more. Jeff Batchelor with code enforcement has been fantastic. And they're the little things, and people sometimes get frustrated with us, but when you see small weeds along the curb, that leads to bigger weeds and
right.
bigger areas. And people want to be proud of where they come from.
That's
and
true.
When I grew up in LaPorte, LaPorte had a pride about where they lived. And I think we kind of lost that. And that's why I ran for mayor. Mm. The expectation is high, but also people now recognize we're doing it for them. And it's great to see that they're now watching and saying, hey, you missed this or you missed that, because I've never said we'll be perfect.
Right.
But we'll wear people out. We will outwork anybody, and we're a part of the region, and we love being a part of that region. But also, if it's in a competitive situation, buckle up, because we're coming. So we love having that opportunity to make LaPorte be a, as we call it, and I call it, a spotless community.
I want to get serious, if you will, for a moment, and I want to talk about a topic that has garnered a lot of chatter on social media, in local media, and in media in the region. And it's a topic that has caused some anxiety for some, and certainly has made a lot more people happy, if you will. And that's this annexation of the 39th North Conservancy District that took effect earlier this year, right? So when I took a look at what the buzz was about, I saw two words. I saw information, and I saw misinformation in a lot of the comments from people. It was either the information's out there, the information's great, it's correct, good, or someone is putting out misinformation, and they were saying that your office was putting out misinformation. So I want you to set the record straight here about this annexation, and speak more to what this will mean for LaPorte. And before you do that, because many of our listening audience may not even be familiar with the topic that we're discussing, can you kind of share what this is?
Absolutely. And so one thing we talked about is making sure with our infrastructure, everything is top-notch. And we're not going out annexing land unless a farmer wants to do that. For example, the Microsoft deal.
Right.
You know, they weren't going to get that deal done without water and sewer, so they needed to be annexed. It was a friendly annexation. All good there. But when you talk about 39 North, people in the county, we don't want to bother you, but if you're in the county, that means you don't receive water and sewer from the city. So we had been supplying water and sewer to the city up at 39 North when it was many years ago, and 20 years ago, a contract when there wasn't much development, wasn't much housing.
Okay.
And so now all this development happened, yet the infrastructure never was improved. And when I heard from our water superintendent, when I heard from our fire chief that, hey, did you know if you plug in, if there's a fire, one hydrant, it dries up all the other hydrants, and you have to pick, if two homes are on fire,
wow,
you have to pick one or the other home. And
oh,
we don't live in a third world country.
Right.
So I said, look, we're gonna fix the problem. It's a $13 million problem. I can't put $13 million of city funds to make sure people are safe without saying, hey, in exchange for that, you're going to be part of the city and be part of the annexation. And if you don't want to do that, then great, the contract's up. This wasn't guaranteed for water and sewer for a lifetime.
Oh.
So we'll end that contract. We won't renew it.
Oh.
And we'll focus on the city of LaPorte. And you can have a well, you can have whatever you need to get your water and sewer.
Hmm.
But we need to focus on the city of LaPorte.
Okay.
And so I think it worked out well. The majority of residents were so supportive of it,
right,
want to see the improvements. And we're moving forward now. And the first thing we did is we talked about spotless. You know, on day one of the annexation, we got up there and street swept the roads to make sure they knew that expectation we have.
Okay, so let me ask you, what do you believe, if not that, is the most pressing issue facing the city of LaPorte right now?
You know, always being able to pivot financially to make sure that, you know, when I was in the legislature, I supported, and 70% of Hoosiers supported, the property tax caps. That's a great thing.
Right.
So that people can stay in their homes and be able to pay a known number for their property taxes.
Right.
But with that, coming from a business side, a government side, we lose 30% of that revenue that stays with the homeowner.
Mm.
And if I was in business, I could have my revenue reduced, but then I'm gonna cut something else to live within my means and still make a profit in private business. Here in the city, we get reduced 30%. Mm-hmm. We're not reducing streets, fire, police. We did not cut any services. We're still providing all those services. So it's allowed us to find new ways to do things, be efficient. And then also, I think the other thing is going to be healthcare. Somebody has to get control of healthcare costs. We're an unhealthy state. The rates are through the roof. And we need to find new ways to do things. As we say here in the city, and we just had a meeting with our leadership team, that number one, we want to improve healthcare for our employees here while also finding a way to reduce cost. And no one's been able to do that. We're going to do that, but we care about our employees here and we want them to know that we want the quality of life for them and their families. And we're gonna find a way, but it means you have to be willing to be very nimble and be flexible, able to pivot on a moment's notice.
I wanna ask you, so we do this in my home around the dinner table every night to just check in with one another, and I kinda call it a heart check. I have a very large family. So we go around the table and we share the ups and downs of our day and or our week, the good, the bad, the ugly. So I wanna ask you, what have been the roses and thorns, if any, during your time serving as mayor for the city of LaPorte?
So I just love coming to work every day. I will tell you, we say team is number one, mm-hmm. Our residents are number two, because if our team doesn't believe in the direction we're going, mm-hmm. Our residents will suffer. And so we have a wonderful team. We have to keep them focused and happy and make sure, I call myself their blockers. So if you're running into a problem, come see me.
Wow.
I'll make sure I block for you so that, you know, you can get your job done. But also love seeing the residents. We've changed a mindset here. We've raised the standard, and it's great to see our residents, people that I grew up with, and especially those from out of town that maybe haven't come back to LaPorte for a while, mm-hmm. and they don't see, you can't see it on a day-to-day basis,
right.
But if you haven't been here for a few years, to look and go, oh my gosh, or to see LaPorte in the Wall Street Journal saying, hey, Microsoft's coming to LaPorte, Indiana,
yes.
Or the national basketball tournament that we bring to the Civic where ESPN comes.
Right, big deal.
I mean, I have people texting that grew up here in LaPorte and go, oh, I can't believe that's the Civic. I'm watching it on ESPN from Arizona, mm-hmm. from California.
Right.
And some of the issues, you know, we haven't found an answer for mental health.
Okay.
And that's something that sits with me, because mental health isn't just the homeless person walking up and down the streets. And everybody, you probably know somebody or have a family individual that's probably dealing with it. We all have somebody. How do we solve that problem to keep from, you know, suicide happening? So those are those concerns. Also the drug addiction, the fentanyl that's coming in here. And people say, you can't win the war on drugs. And I said, we will end the war on drugs. And I just had it with the police chief. I'm passionate. I've had to stop going door to door on my own late at night because I've walked into some situations.
It's not safe.
But
right?
You're not going to do that with our children in LaPorte. Mm-hmm. And I want the hammer dropped. I want to knock in doors. And that's what I've said since day one, kick in doors. And we're going to pull people out that don't want to live their best life in LaPorte. And we're going to address those that are not following the rule of law, and it's just unacceptable. And I think you'll see some things in the future where if our police department, if our leadership doesn't believe that we will end the war on drugs and we will win the war on drugs, then that's a problem for me.
And that was LaPorte Mayor Tom Dermody as part of our new series, Meet the Mayor. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media.
Legacy Foundation is Lake County's community foundation. For over 30 years, we've partnered with donors and nonprofits, focusing on youth development, the arts, the environment, health, literacy, and other causes that matter to you. We're committed to Lake County forever. First things first, Border County is dedicated to supporting families, healthy beginnings, and quality early learning, ensuring every Border County baby is born prepared for a strong start in life. Learn more at firstthingspc.org.
I have a very strong connection to other students. Everyone makes an effort to help each other. I'll remember the feeling of being here, the feeling that I was a part of a family.
Learn more at pnw.edu.
Additional support for Building Blocks is provided generously by Tom Sorlis and Sue Eleuterio, as well as Porter County Community Foundation, serving Porter County since 1996.
Building Blocks, the podcast, a co-production of Lakeshore Public Media and First Things First Porter County, is dedicated to exploring the science of early childhood development and addressing the challenges that Northwest Indiana encounters. Dr. Mary Jane Eisenhower, Executive Director of First Things First Porter County, explores the vast world of early childhood development as she welcomes local experts, parents, and practitioners to discuss the building blocks for brain and language development. Here's Mary Jane Eisenhower with more.
Hi, today I'm talking with Julie Wendorf. She's the president of the Indiana Library Federation and the director of the Crown Point Library. Good morning, Julie. Welcome to Building Blocks.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We're excited to talk to you about books, my favorite subject. You have my dream job of being the librarian. I grew up going to the library and took my children to the library. And tell us about your days at the library.
Well, my days are very busy and they never look the same. So sometimes it's doing outreach like this. Sometimes it's corralling the teens after school that show up at the library. Sometimes it's popping into story time. Sometimes it's doing library outreach, and sometimes it's doing boring things like state reports for the library.
lots of really interesting parts of your job.
Exactly.
Sometimes for young parents, it's hard to imagine babies and toddlers in the library. But I know you feel differently. Tell us about babies and libraries, and why should we be taking our children, our very young children, to the library?
Sure. I always ask the question when I'm doing outreach, how old do you have to be to get a library card and have the kids guess? And they're always like 5, 6, whenever they can write their name. And I said, no, actually 0 years age. So we'd love for you to stop on the way home from the hospital, actually, to get your baby their very own library card. We love having young children in the library. Library is not a place where we go shh anymore. No. It's a place for a lively play and learning and development, and perfectly suited for babies and children.
It's one of the last free places that families can go, really. There's no charge to get into the library. There's no expectation that you're going to have to buy something. Tell us what offerings are available at most libraries, and then specifically at Crown Point Library.
Sure. I always like to say that libraries are a barrier-free place for early literacy, so it doesn't cost you anything to walk in the building. Our services are free, and so you have access to so many things, whether it's a story time or just checking out books, using our databases for early childhood literacy, so many different things that we have that at our library. Especially, we've kind of specialized in the idea of play. So we have great interactive play areas that we opened up in a really unfortunate time of January 2020. So we opened them up and had a great splash of a couple of months until we had to close them for a number of years because of cleaning problems. But then we've reopened them in 2023. And it is a draw to our community and has driven not only foot traffic to the building, but it's become a destination station.
And tell us about early literacy. So you mentioned early literacy, and we're talking about the first 1,000 days. So many of us think of literacy as just picking up that book and reading it and being able to, you know, follow along with the story. But there's so much that happens before that.
Oh, sure. We have baby story time, and baby story time is not only listening to books and reading books, but also modeling correct holding of a book. It's modeling the play that goes along with the book, the sensory issues of that. The library actually uses the model of Every Child Ready to Read, which has 5 principles, which is reading, writing, talking, playing, and singing. And so all those things happen during our story times, whether they're the youngest all the way up to our older children, too.
Playing and singing, we don't often associate those things with reading. What's the connection?
Well, it's just the vocabulary, the rhyming that goes into that. It helps children to build their vocabulary, but understand words as symbols and what they mean. But play actually helps them assign meaning to symbols. So that imaginary play is really important for early literacy. It helps them not only build their skills of collaborative play, but also helps them to imagine things, tell stories, and that makes them ready to read and write for themselves.
And we really do. We live our lives by stories. And so having that story in your imagination helps you understand that a picture book, a story is just those words written down. Mm-hmm. That's really, really exciting. We think a lot about brain architecture in building blocks in those first 1,000 days. How are all of these components of every child ready to read? How are those building that brain architecture?
Well, it certainly gives them experience with different things. Oftentimes, the library is able to kind of create those experiences that parents, especially during those first 1,000 days or even early childhood, they're just too busy sometimes to create themselves. And so through early childhood education at the library, we actually model those things that they can bring home into their home. So it's actually a teaching experience. Every child ready to read is really more aimed at the parent than it is to the child, actually, in helping them to learn those skills to teach them at home. So incorporating a new song, those activities, process art, whatever it is, it's modeling to them what they can do at home, whether it's a sensory box that's very simple or it's a process art with using shaving cream on a cookie tray, all those things that they might not know themselves. And we just kind of provide those experiences.
It's very daunting to be a parent of a new little one. And I, you know, I'd been a kindergarten teacher and I had studied early childhood development. And yet bringing those little ones home, you're just a little bit overwhelmed, more than a little bit overwhelmed. Give us some really specific tips. You talk about sensory boxes or a new song. What are some, like, really tomorrow, a listener today could just implement later on this evening or tomorrow, a new song that you might have or an idea for a sensory experience?
I think the simplest thing that I always tell parents is narrate your day. Talk about what you're doing with your child. Just because they can't understand it doesn't mean that they're not listening to you. So hearing that vocabulary-rich environment in their home, whether it's you talking about what you're doing to make a bottle or even clean up the family room, whatever you're doing, they're listening and hearing your voice. And it's really important for them to hear a rich vocabulary in those early days. So it helps build their brains and prepares them for early learning.
It's like being a sportscaster. I tell people, you just pretend like you're on air and you're just telling the little one what's happening and what's going on. You might add some color commentary, but it really is about talking about what's just going on in front of them.
Exactly. And I think that people feel awkward at first, mm-hmm. but once you get used to it, you don't even realize you're doing it anymore. And adding some song into that and different experiences builds that richness into a child's life.
That's very exciting. Mm-hmm. So I know in your work at the library and with the Rotary and Crown Point, you did some amazing work to bring Dolly Parton Imagination Library to the community. Tell us about Dolly Parton Imagination Library and the efforts that you've made to make sure that all children have access to books.
So the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, as you know, is just a fantastic program throughout the United States and actually throughout the world in some other countries. Dolly Parton herself and her foundation has set up a system where states can kind of partner with them or organizations can partner with them to provide books for children's birth through age 5. So the Crown Point Rotary has actually sponsored that program since 2014 for the children that live within the Crown Point School Community School District. So they've been doing that for a long time. They do fundraisers to support that. Up until 2023, they provided 100% of the funds for those children to get their books each month. Right now, we have about 900 children that we support on that every month. In 2023, Governor Holcomb at the time started the Dolly Parton Imagination Library at the state level, where he provided 50% of those funds for programs throughout Indiana. So what that meant for Crown Point Rotary is that we were able to expand our program because we could not afford to have it a huge program. So we kind of expanded that program enormously during that time. When that legislation was passed, places that did not have programs actually were able to be created. And libraries throughout the state really played a leading role in that, whether they were building coalitions of other organizations, working with community foundations, Boys and Girls Club, other organizations that have like-minded feelings about literacy to build those new programs. Here in Lake County, we had a couple programs already existing before that legislation. One was ours, which is the oldest one in Rotary, but then Lake County Public Library created their program in 2018, modeled after what we had been doing at Crown Point Rotary. So they started their program, and then there's a very small program in Whiting that that was there around 2020, I believe. But the rest of North County didn't have the access to the program because they simply just didn't have the community partnerships that they needed to get that 50% fundraised. So working with the Dean and Barbara White Foundation at the end of 2024, we were able to get funding for 5 years for that area to have that 50% funding. So we opened up that as a soft launch in February. So excited that we have over, I think it's 360 kids already enrolled in that program, and we haven't even done the big kickoff yet.
Amazing.
So really excited to bring that program to some of those kids that probably need it the most in our communities.
And for our listeners who may not understand what the Dolly, what that looks like each and every day or every month, tell us when you sign up, or how do you sign up for Dolly Parton Imagination Library?
Well, in Lake County now, all you have to do is visit your local library, and the local library will help you get signed up for Dolly Parton Imagination Library. You can also do it online as well. But if you go to the library, they'll kind of walk you through the whole process. What happens once you're approved and it goes through the process of getting uploaded into the system, in about 2 months later, you'll start receiving books for your child every month until they turn five, age-appropriate books. So if you have a three-year-old and a four-year-old, they're going to get entirely different books. So they'll be age-appropriate for them, and they'll get to keep them for themselves.
So this registration process, what kind of information are they looking for? Is it really detailed?
No, it's really simple. All they need to have is their address verified and their birth date, so we know when they get their last book, and a mom and dad's name and email. So it's very simple.
So it wouldn't affect any other benefits that a family might get? You're not disclosing, special numbers or anything like that?
Nope. It's totally free. No strings attached.
No strings attached. That's amazing. I know every child that signs up, no matter what age, if they're signed up right after they're born or right before their fourth or fifth, during their fifth year, they get the little engine that could.
Yes. That's actually the first book that they get, and then they get a graduation book when they finish up the program. People always ask me as a librarian, why can't they just go to the library and get books? And of course, I would say, of course I want them to come to the public library. But what happens is that, children are dependent on their parents to bring them to the library, and that always doesn't happen in a busy life. So having books in the home has been a proven thing to show that just having books in your house makes you be better prepared for kindergarten. And so this program actually provides those books to have them in their homes, and they're ready there anytime they need them.
And I just love the idea of all these children in our community understanding, here's this book that we've all read, The Little Engine mm-hmm. That Could, and you arrive in kindergarten and the kindergarten teacher mm-hmm. pulls out that book and hands are flying. We know that book. Right. I know that story. Yeah. And it's that shared experience that really does build the community.
And the idea of ownership of books. Mm-hmm. I think it just gives them a proud time when they these are my books. And what often we find out is that receiving those books at home drives them to go to the library, because let's say they get the one Pete the Cat book and they just fall in love with Pete the Cat. Who wouldn't, right? But then they want more. So where do they go to get more of them? To the library.
To the library.
So, yeah.
And in the research that I've read, I understand that the more books a child has, the longer that they will stay in school. So that book ownership really is important.
It is.
And for the littlest ones, we think about those babies that are really just awakening to the world. It's daunting again for parents to know what to do with a book. So it's one thing to get the books in the mail, but how are we helping parents to understand what they need to do with those books?
Well, that's where I think story time comes into play, and where we model how you read a book to a child, how you talk about books, how you experience books, sometimes how you even taste books, right?
Yes.
I mean, for babies, that's why board books are made, right? Because you like to eat them. But I think there's so many ways that our story times kind of model that in terms of what you do when you read a book. And, I've always had questions. Well, my kid doesn't like to sit on my lap and listen to a book. And not all kids do. I had two boys. One of them could sit on my lap for hours and listen book after book. The other one didn't like it at all. And I finally became more comfortable with knowing that if I read a book to him while he was playing in the room, he was listening. It's just a different kind of listening. And so don't be worried if your child doesn't just want to nestle into your lap and sit there for ages reading a book. Some kids have that attention span to do that. Others don't. Doesn't mean they're not listening. Doesn't mean you should stop.
That's such an important point, because so many of us just have that image, or we see those images of this, you know, beautiful, cuddly experience, and not all children are going to be doing that, nestled in your lap and looking at a book. So what are some of the tips that you might give parents for sharing books with little ones? Very specifically, I know, like, even talking about the cover of a book.
Talking about the cover, talking about the title, talking about who the author is, talking about how you open a book, talking about the way that print goes from left to right. There's so many things that you can talk about. Talking about the end and how you open the book and turn it over. I mean, just there's some kids that don't have any experience with that. They get to kindergarten and they don't even know how to open a book.
It's true. I have seen that. And we also know from research, this is my favorite party trick, although it's not quite a party trick, but a baby that's been read to consistently by their ninth month, if you hand them a familiar board book upside down and backwards, you know what they'll do, right? They're going to flip it around to the right way because they've had that experience. Yep. Of looking at the book. So those really important skills that we don't even think about as adults, those come into play those very first days and reading the book and all those things.
One of the other things I like to remind parents, we do have a lot of programs at the library, summer reading, winter reading, where they're counting books or they're counting minutes at read, or for our 1,000 Books Before Kindergarten program, where you're logging your books. And some parents say, oh, but my kid likes to read the same book every night at bedtime. And I said, that's fantastic.
That is fantastic.
And I said, I know it gets tiring after a while for you as a parent, but really hearing the same book really is a great literacy builder, because they actually, by memorizing that book, start to connect those sounds to those words and letters on the page.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And we know that though, that love for reading, that love for books, that love for learning really does start in those early storybook days.
It does.
That's great. So I'm talking with Julie Wendorf today about the library, about books, about reading and singing and playing with your little one, and how truly important that is for our brain architecture in those first 1,000 days. So, Julie, we know this last legislative session, there were some new things introduced. There were some questions around how funding might happen for Imagination Library. Where do things stand right now?
Well, right now, our funding, the 50% provided by the state, was cut out of the state budget. So we don't have funding for that from the state. The governors and the First Lady have promised to do that philanthropically for us. We haven't seen a lot of results on that yet, but we're hopeful that their commitment to making sure that program continues will come to fruition. So many of those programs that started after 2023 can't necessarily support themselves 100% of the time. So they're really kind of depending on that 50% funding to get those programs running in throughout the state.
For community members who are hearing this for the first time, this, you know, threat to the funding for Imagination Library, what are some recommendations that you have, or that the Indiana Federation for Libraries is promoting to help communities sustain these programs?
So what I would say, as we look forward to the next budget season in 2 years, is to let your legislators know that you want your taxpayer dollars to pay for early literacy things like Dolly Parton Imagination Library, so that we can get that inserted back into the budget for the next budget season. But talk to your local library, ask them who's the partner, the funding partner for your Imagination Library in your community. Like I said before, mine is Rotary. You can donate to those organizations. You can donate to our fund that's at the Community Foundation, whether it's the Legacy Foundation for the Greater Lake County one or the Crown Point Foundation for the Crown Point program. But just ask your library. They'll let you know.
They will let you
yes,
know.
Yes.
And I know in Porter County, they've partnered with the Porter County Community Foundation. Yes. And First Things First Porter.
Yes.
County. LaPorte County also has their Friends of the Library that supports their Imagination Library.
They do too. And Lake County Public Libraries is supported by their foundation as well.
So lots of people really interested in this. Tell us about how families might be reaching those, or how libraries are reaching those families who may not always have access to the library. You mentioned outreach. What kind of outreach are you doing for families who don't find themselves at the library, or who may have other barriers to getting there?
Sure. In 2015, I actually was the first outreach librarian at our library. That's how I started full-time at the library. And so what we did is tried to bring the library outside the walls of the library. For those of them that were not familiar with the library or weren't comfortable going to the library, maybe they had a bad experience as a child or even as a teen or even adult. And so we wanted to make sure that we let them know that libraries are different than probably what they experienced as a child. And we let them know about all the services that we have. So sometimes that means showing up at the corn roast at Bulldog Park, or showing up at the farmer's market, or showing up at schools for their literacy nights, making sure that we're getting access for those kids and those families for a library card and letting them know what kind of exciting things they can do at the library. But I'd tell you, the game changer for us at the library has actually been drawing them into the library with some of the things that we have there. So I also dabble in social media. So when you'll see pictures of our interactive play area at both locations, and it's always staged to show the great toys, and it changes every month. So that's what's great. When I dreamt that up, I thought, I want kids to think, what's new at the library this time? So they're coming, you know, maybe they're coming twice a month, and so they might not see that play area for only two times a month, and then there's something new. So it's something great, and it gives them a way to play with toys that they might not be able to have at home. We were really blessed to have the Crown Point Lions Club donate $10,000 for us for this area, which helps for us to buy those toys.
Because that goes a long way when you're buying those toys, which really we have to think about as learning materials. They're not simply toys. These are things that are focusing on vocabulary and problem solving, also just social relationships.
Right. So we have different themes. One of our newest one was the space theme. So when we moved from our old building in Crown Point about 12 years ago, 13 years ago, we left our beloved space shuttle back at the old building, and every time I talked to Jerry Ross, he would remind me of that. So I promised him that we would have a space theme at our new interactive play area, and I finally found all the toys that I could have that theme just this past month, and it was very well loved. But those kids see those pictures, and parents start tagging. Those posts get the most interaction because they're just tagging, because that place has become a place where people meet up. They say, let's go meet at the library and play, and then go to a park or whatever they want to do. And so we're really excited about that space, which is open 7 days a week. Anytime the library is open, they can come and play there for free and have an experience that's really not unsimilar to a children's museum in many ways.
Absolutely.
On a smaller scale, but also but available and accessible anytime they need it.
And at no charge, so critical. Yeah. And we know parents are craving connection. They want to spend time with other parents. They learn from one another. But not just parents, great caregivers, also grandparents, others in the family who are looking for ways to connect, but also looking for ways to enrich their child's life. Very exciting.
I think that's really something that we find the libraries really help build for all ages, is that place for being a community hub, being a community builder, being a place where you can build friendships, whether it's the children playing in an interactive play area and those two kids hit it off and all of a sudden they have another play date outside the library, or it happens as we battle senior loneliness, the epidemic that we're having in our country, where we have craft groups for seniors and they come and meet new friends too. So the library does it for all ages.
Intergenerational that as well. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about just the wonderful ways that libraries have shifted and changed. And I'm wondering, you know, what is your vision for the future of the Crown Point Library?
Well, I love the library, so I can talk about it all day long, but just continuing to be a place where people gather. I think the library has demonstrated in many ways throughout our country how we adapt to what our communities need. Mm-hmm. So I'm always looking for what our communities need and responding to that. So whatever they need, we will find a way to serve them. But I think it's about a place a lot of times. We have so many people. In fact, we had 27,000 more people use our library last year than we did in the prior year. So people are using our space, whether it's for a nice place to work from, or to use our public computers, or to use our play area, have meetings. We have countless board meetings that happen in our meeting room. So we're just a place where people gather.
Where people gather, where they feel comfortable, where they feel welcomed. Yes. I know as an educator, I relied on the library so much. And I'm wondering what services you might offer or support you might offer for our early educators who are often under-resourced, overworked, and how might those childcare providers or early educators in centers or home-based programs interact with the library?
Well, I don't know if you know, but I'm also a trained teacher as well. So I started my career as a teacher, so I'm always mindful of that and how we can support them. We always are, of course, available for school tours. So preschools will come and do tours. Schools will come and do field trips to us, and we'll teach them about the library. We also have resources that we'll gather for them if they're needing, hey, I need 100 books on whatever. We'll help them gather those and get them ready. So we're always looking for ways that we can support curriculum in the schools. Every year. For example, we check what's those summer reading titles for the kids going in the high school into the next year. So we make sure we have multiple copies of those so they're available for those kids that might not necessarily be able to buy a book. And we don't want them to not have the materials that they need to be successful going into the new school year. So lots of different ways.
Wonderful. So you're an educator, a librarian, a mother. How has working in the library shifted who you are as a person?
Well, my staff like to call me the Leslie Knope of libraries.
Okay.
So it's library, library, library all the time. So I'm always talking about it, whether I'm in the, you're sitting next to somebody and they're reading a book. I'm like, what book are you reading? Or if they tell me, oh, I'm just finishing an Audible audiobook. I'm like, did you know you can get that for free at your library using the Libby app? So it's always a way to start a conversation on how library services can be a part of their life.
I love that. Yeah. Really out there cheering on the libraries around the state, around the country.
Everywhere.
Where did this love of learning and love of libraries and books come from for you?
You know, it's kind of funny because I was a late learner to reading. I struggled to read. And I remember like in third grade being in the slowest reading group, you know, and being very aware of that.
Of course.
I was just a late bloomer because by fifth grade, I was the highest of my class reading in comprehension and speed. And that just continued. So reading became a kind of a refuge for me and my family. And I was so lucky to have a branch library down the street from me where I could walk or bike. And so going there and finding books for myself was a great way for me to have access, because unlike some people, I did not have books in my home. My parents didn't value books. And so I didn't have a lot of books at home. So I really look forward to being able to get them myself.
So you really changed the story for yourself, and I imagine for your family.
It's always been important. We have a library in our home.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So I have to ask, what is your favorite children's book?
You know, I love The Secret Garden. That's my favorite children's book. I actually have about 30 copies, different editions of that, a collection of them. So I'm always looking for a new, beautiful edition of The Secret Garden.
And what about your favorite book to share with babies and toddlers?
Oh, I probably love Bear Schnorrs On, I think, the most. It's one of my favorites. Yeah.
And what we know about those books is the illustrations are so...
so gorgeous.
So beautiful.
Yes, yes.
And
yeah,
the words are so beautiful and paired together.
Yes.
That's what makes a picture
very lyrical.
Book
yeah.
Magical.
Yeah. Yes.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up today, thinking about what is important for our community to know about the library, the future of the library in our communities in Northwest Indiana.
I would say right now, as we face property tax reform and the ways that the revenue for libraries is really being challenged now, is to reach out to your library and support it. Love your local library. See what they need from you and find out what they have for you. We would love to serve you, and we need your support more than ever right now.
And how does one go about doing that? If I've never ventured into the library, how can I not be scared to do that?
Sure. I mean, getting a library card and using your library is a great way to demonstrate your love for the library, but also you can become a friend of the library. Many libraries have their friends group that you can become a member of and volunteer and help out the efforts to keep your library services robust.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And we want to thank you so much for all the work that you do. And on behalf of the Indiana Library Federation, but also the Crown Point Library, there's just a lot of exciting things marching forward. And even in these times of challenges, I think the library continues to be, like you said, a refuge for so many children and families and seniors and our entire community.
Thank you.
Yes.
Building Blocks, the podcast, is a co-production of Lakeshore Public Media and First Things First Porter County. For more information on Building Blocks, including this podcast, as well as the television show, visit lakeshorepublicmedia.org/buildingblocks.
Legacy Foundation is Lake County's community foundation. For over 30 years, we've partnered with donors and nonprofits, focusing on youth development, the arts, the environment, health, literacy, and other causes that matter to you. We're committed to Lake County forever. First Things First, Porter County is dedicated to supporting families, healthy beginnings, and quality early learning, ensuring every Porter County baby is born prepared for a strong start in life. Learn more at firstthingspc.org.
I have a very strong connection to other students. Everyone makes an effort to help each other. I remember the feeling of being here, the feeling that I was a part of a family.
Learn more at pnw.edu.
Additional support for Building Blocks is provided generously by Tom Sorlis and Sue Eleuterio, as well as Porter County Community Foundation, serving Porter County since 1996.
Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guest, and we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.